Welcome to the Turning Pain into Power podcast. My name is Davina Faust, and I am a life transformation expert. My goal for this podcast is to bring you some positivity every single week and to inspire you to recognize that your struggles are just part of your story. I have completely changed my life, and I just want you to know that you can do the same thing. I'll also be bringing on some really incredible people who are just like you, who have learned to turn their own pain into power. This episode was brought to you by Just Strong Clothing. Just Strong Clothing is a lifestyle brand for strong women. Whether you are an experienced lifter, a new starter, or have simply overcome great adversaries in your life, the Just Strong community is here to make sure you never give up. With t-shirts and crop tops, hoodies, vests, leggings, shorts, and bottoms, just like the squat, the clothing is a symbol of standing back up, fighting against any resistance life throws at you, and becoming stronger. And if you'd like a 10% off discount, head on over to the checkout and use the code DAVFAUST10. For 10% off your purchase. Be strong, and let's get into the show. Hey guys, welcome to the Turning Pain into Power podcast. I am so fulfilled and so excited to share this episode with you this week. I have Amanda Frangoulis, who I knew through college, and I also knew her husband in college as well. They are a power couple. And for a very long time, they were struggling with infertility and being unable to have children together. So she turned pain into power by not only taking the route of adoption, but adopting a special needs child from overseas in China. So I'm just so curious and so lit up to hear this story. Watching Adelaide on my newsfeed has been so exciting, and I'm just so grateful to share this story with the audience. So Amanda, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So let's go all the way back to when you first realized that you were struggling with, you said you struggle with PCOS, which triggered your infertility. And at what point did you and Alex decide that adoption would be the right path for you?
So this actually goes back further than you think. I actually was diagnosed with one version of infertility when I was a sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. It required invasive surgery, and I did that in the summer between my sophomore and junior year of college. And that is actually called endometriosis.
Mm.
My version of endometriosis was very minor, but because of how deep the growths were, that's what caused a lot of the issues. And I was told my fertility should not be affected. And then I met my husband, we fell in love, we get married, and about 3 years into our marriage, we decided, hey, it's time to have a kid. So I went off of all of my medication to treat my endometriosis, which did control, the ability to or to not get pregnant. It was birth control. And we basically decided, like, we're just going to see what happens. And the second I went off birth control, all of a sudden, you know, my periods completely stopped. I also had a lot of cystic acne, which was pretty embarrassing being in my 20s and looking like I was a teenage girl. And I gained 50 pounds, and it just, nothing made sense. And I had doctors telling me I wasn't dieting, when really I went to the gym about 5 times a week, and I did, a really like well-rounded balanced diet. And we decided, you know, let's try the infertility route. And we tried that, and we were able to get pregnant, but then given my health, I ended up having a miscarriage. We decided to adopt like anyway. So my husband was adopted as well, and we wanted to have a blended family of both biological children and adopted children. Our friends lovingly called us the next Brad and Angie, because we were just going to be like that couple that had like all of these children. So we decided to look into adoption solely because of my polycystic ovarian syndrome. It causes 50% rate of miscarriage. And we just decided, why are we spending all this money on infertility treatments when it's not a guarantee, when we could just adopt and that's how we build our family? So that's how we looked into adoption and that's how we got to China.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I know a lot of women who actually struggle with endometriosis, and I can only sympathize. And it's one of those things where, you know, we as women, we never really think it's going to be a problem for us, but then once we face it, it's just like such an overwhelming sense of defeat, you know? And I can only imagine there were moments when you felt like giving up through that. And how did you just push through that? And how did you know that you deserved to be the mother that you always knew you were meant to be?
Well, there were definitely times that I felt like giving up. And the way I looked at it, I was like, you know what? If this is the lowest it's going to get, there's nowhere to go but up. Mm-hmm. So like my personal token in my life, that's like a symbol that I look at and I'm just like, yes, this is me. It's actually a bow and arrow. So for me, the bow is like the world and my life and the circumstances that surround me. And I'm the arrow. So am I going to let it pull me back down and make me sad and depressed and angry and overwhelmed? Or am I going to let it free me and I can just shoot and hit the target? So every once in a while, if I'm having a rough day, I draw an arrow on myself. I draw it on my hand so I can easily see it throughout the day. I even have a arrow bracelet. But, you know, to get through the hard stuff, you just have to always keep a positive mindset and look at everything else around you that's going right instead of focusing on what's going wrong. And if I was only to focus on like, oh my gosh, I'm not able to get pregnant, I'm not looking at all of the other options out there to be a mom. Because at the end of the day, you could be a mom to a kid that is your foster kid, to an adopted kid, to your best friend's kid, and like you're like their second mom. Being a mom doesn't mean DNA. Being a mom means that love and it means that connection. And that's what I have with my daughter now. She's not biologically mine, which actually has surprised a few people because apparently we look alike. We have that love. We have that connection. We have that bond. And I wouldn't trade that in for anything.
I absolutely have chills right now. Like I'm just so, what you're saying is so true and it's so powerful and it's a great reminder for all of us. And like you said just now, there are so many options to pursue when it comes to adoption and when it comes to taking that route. What made you specifically choose China?
Oh, that's a great question. So this is actually a really long answer. So I'll try to keep it short.
Yeah, go for it.
So my husband was actually internationally adopted as well. Mm. So we knew international adoption was an option. Like we weren't naive being like, you can only adopt from the United States. So we actually first decided to look at the United States and say like, hey, like what are the programs out there? What's it like? We actually found that American adoptions were actually more risky for us to take because we had already had a loss. So in the state of Pennsylvania, if you were to adopt, birth parents have 30 days to change their mind. So technically, Alex and I could get a phone call saying, hey, a baby girl was just born in a hospital out in Pittsburgh. You were chosen as the family. You need to get here tomorrow. We could get that phone call and have to drop our lives, go out to Pittsburgh, get this beautiful baby, bring her home, have her for 30 days. And then when we go to finalize the adoption, we could then be told, oh, the birth mom changed her mind.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. And we just decided, you know, we already lost a child. We didn't want to go through that pain again. So we decided, let's just look overseas and take a child who's in an orphanage or in a foster home and give them a family because they need one. They're in need. So we looked at a variety of different countries. We first started in Colombia, where my husband was adopted from. It was extremely expensive. And we also didn't fit all of the requirements that they had because each country actually has a different set of requirements for adoption. All of them also have a different set of cost. Colombia adoptions were extremely overwhelmingly expensive. So then we decided to start looking overseas. Like, we decided to look into Korea, we looked into Japan, we looked into China. And when we were reading the China program, it just clicked. There was, everything was black and white to us. There was no gray areas. And it just seemed like, okay, they have a great reputation. Because in all honesty, like, if you think of it, if you know anyone who's internationally adopted, they're most likely adopted from China. And it's because their program is so stable and so reputable. So for us, it just made sense. And then from there, we chose our agency, and the rest is history.
Wow. Well, that is actually really great to know, just for future reference, if I or anyone else is considering adoption. It's great to know that, you know, China is a really great network for doing that. And so when you matched up with your agency, how did it work when it came to selecting Adelaide specifically?
China law dictates you cannot adopt until you are 30 years of age. And that is because they want to make sure the parents are in a stable relationship, so the child isn't being placed with a newly married couple who's still trying to figure everything out. They also want to make sure that the family has a stable job, a stable home, because they want these kids to be happy and successful. So we actually decided to adopt at the age of 27, and we had to wait for 3 years. And the China program isn't expensive, but it's definitely a financial hit. So my husband and I each, at one point or another, were each working 3 jobs to make this work. We saved up for 3 years. And when I turned 29, we contacted several agencies requesting information. And we ended up falling in love with one out in Colorado, known as CCAI. And they're actually the nation's leading adoption agency for Chinese adoptions. And they said to me, okay, you're too young. Contact us when you're 29 and a half, because you can't start any of the paperwork until you're 29 and a half. So we waited up. So my 29th and a half birthday was July 4th, 2017. So we stayed up on July 3rd and submitted all of our application materials for consideration on July 4th at midnight. So we were up on July 3rd really late doing all the paperwork. Because when you submit anything to a adoption agency that's international, I don't know how domestic works, but with international, they keep everything and then they match you with children based on the date that they receive your paperwork. So my crazy mind was like, oh, we'll be the first people in for July 4th because we're up until, you know, the wee hours of the morning doing this. So we submitted the paperwork and we waited. And every day I would log on to their website multiple times a day and view a select amount of children's profiles. So with special needs adoption with China, you can actually view a very small portion of the children on CCAI's website. And it's because they want these children to be matched with families that are considering adoption but have not yet started the paperwork. The children on the website are the ones that they were having trouble placing with families who already had all their paperwork submitted. So this one day, I was sitting on my couch, got home from work. I saw that they had updated their website, and I was scrolling through. I was excited to see new children. And all of a sudden, I came across this photo of this beautiful little girl. And she had, I'll never forget it, just porcelain white skin, the blackest raven hair you'll ever see, these wide, big eyes, and just like this perfect little heart-shaped mouth. And I just looked at her and I said, that's her. Like, that's it. Like, that's my daughter. And I clicked on her photo, which then led me to a very brief story of who she is, you know, how she became an orphan. I looked at her video. I watched it like at least 10 times. And then I looked at all her pictures and I said, okay, this is her. So I emailed the agency and asked to be considered to view her file. And then about an hour later, my husband comes home from work, and he doesn't even walk in the front door before I'm shoving my phone in his face saying, "What do you think of her? What do you think of her?" And he was like, "Oh, you know, like, she's really cute. Her, you know, her video is nice. Like, her biography is good. Like, it looks good. So why don't we reach out to CCAI later tonight and ask to, you know, be considered?" And I said, "Okay, great," because I already did it like an hour ago. And he looked at me and he's like, "Yeah, I'm not surprised."
And then the next day
we got her file.
Wow. So, like, okay, first of all, I almost burst into tears when you were like, "Yep, that's my daughter." Like, that is just so beautiful. And like intuitive, when you know, you know. And I'm just so happy for you to have had that moment. So, you know, the paperwork and the actual adoption process was a long and draining one, I assume. But I do remember that happy day when you went to, you both went to China and you spent some time there. And I remember just how detailed you were with, like, you know, getting your bag ready and just having everything she could possibly need on hand. And what was that feeling like when you saw her for the first time in person?
Oh my God. So I have a video of that on Facebook, and I watch it every once in a while because that day just seems like it happened a million years ago, but it also feels like it happened yesterday at the same time. So she's only been with us for 6 months, and looking back on that day, you know, it was really hot in that room. So in China, they have air conditioning, but they don't like it cold like we do here. So the room was hot and stuffy. There were other families. The whole room was just, everyone was nervous. Some parents were crying. They were just so scared. And, you know, the kids were going to be dropped off at this adoption office from different orphanages across the country anytime between 10 and noon. And I was just saying to my husband, I'm like, okay, she's going to be the first kid here because her orphanage is only an hour and a half away. Other kids are coming from 4 or 5 hours away. She's going to be the first one here. It's going to be so great. Like, I was so positive about the entire thing. And it's like, not happening. She's just not coming. Every time a kid comes in through the doors, it's not her. I'm feeling very defeated. And then my husband walks away to go use the bathroom. And of course, as he's going to the bathroom, she pulls up in her van and I see her get taken out and I just start crying. And I'm recording the video and I'm like, of course, like, my husband's not here. This is a special moment. Where is he? And then he finally comes running over to me. And our daughter walks in the front door into the office and is just scared. You know, she's just looking around. She's like, where am I? Who are all these people? Why are they staring at me? Who is this woman in this red dress come running up to me saying, "Ni hao?" And she looks nothing like me. She's white. She has reddish hair. And then she has this guy, I've never seen men before, who's this man next to her. She was terrified of us, but it was also curiosity as well. She was really sweaty. She was really, really hungry, really thirsty. So we had to meet all of those needs and at the same time try to get her to trust us. There was a lot of crying, a lot of, you know, screaming. But then the second we left that office building and went outside, I was carrying her, I was holding her, and she just looks up at me and smiles. And I turned to Alex and I'm like, get your phone out right now, take a picture of this. She did it again and looked at me and smiled. And that's actually the first picture of her and I together. And I have that in a frame in my house and I see it every day. And I just remember that really hot, sweaty day. In July in China.
Wow. So, so special. And I guess when it comes to building trust, it's one of those things that does take time. So I know when she first transitioned over to from China to your home, there were probably a lot of really hard nights or a lot of really hard situations. Could you reflect on those times a little bit?
Yeah. So it's never going to stop being hard. Because kids are coming from trauma. They're coming from brokenness. They're coming from more things that... So my daughter ultimately has seen more things in her 3 years being alive than I've seen in my 31. So with her, we literally, some days we have to take it minute by minute because she's having a rough day. She might have a nightmare that night, waking up screaming, and then need to co-sleep with me in bed because she's too afraid to be alone. Then there's other days where she's just like, I'm an independent woman. I'm going to do my own thing. Like, I don't need a parent. But that's because she's never had a parent before. She's always parented herself. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we have to find like this even balance with her. And we kind of like are negotiators with her. Like, okay, if you do this, we can do that. The parenting method that we have been following is called parenting with connection. And it's actually pretty big in the adoption community. And it doesn't talk about like disciplining your child or punishing them, yelling at them. It's more or less like positive reinforcement and positive correction. So if she were to want something and demand like, I want this, and she can't have it, we'll just say to her like, hey, you can't have that, but here are two things that you can have, pick one. So mm-hmm. we give her choices, but we're not letting her have like the entire oyster. Like we're giving her, you know, the world is not her oyster. We're limiting her choices so that she can choose wisely, but we're giving her that power that she needs because she has no control over her life. She didn't choose to be adopted. She didn't choose us as parents. Nothing about this is like this beautiful, happy ending. It's every day we're working to have this complete stranger, and we're strangers to her.
And not even mentioning her special needs on top of all of that. She has a condition, and I know I'm going to mess up the pronunciation. So could you just fill the listener?
So she has arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, which is a neuromuscular disorder that causes joints, tendons, and muscles to not know how to do their job. So with my daughter, her left arm does not work. She only has use of her fingers in her left hand. So she can't bend her elbows. So whenever she needs to feed herself, she'll take her hand and like lean on an object like a wall or a table or a chair and then push her body into her hand to feed herself. She's also affected in her neck, so she cannot turn her head fully. And she also is affected in both of her knees, so her knees are locked. We were told when we viewed her file by an international adoption specialist that she would never walk. But this child runs, this child dances, this child walks. She does everything that the doctor said she would never be able to do. So she's literally beating all of the odds.
It's amazing. And, you know, it's, I think a big part of that just contributes to the positive environment that you guys are raising her in. You know, if she constantly hears that she can't do things, then she won't be able to. But you guys have really encouraged her independence, and you've done that in such a loving way. And I love seeing her dance to Bob Dylan. And I love, you know, you posted an update a few days ago where she actually did bend her elbow a little bit, right? Like, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also, I have to give her credit too, because, oh my God, like when I look at this kid every day, I'm just like, how are you this amazing? Mm-hmm. And I know that every parent is like, my kid is the most amazing kid. But in all honesty, like, yes, I feel that as a parent, but also I just have that amazing of a child. And anyone who meets her will tell you that. Being told, you're going to adopt this kid, she's probably going to be in a wheelchair. She's probably going to be living at home forever or need like live-in care. To have a kid who can, she's now taking on and off socks. She's taking on and off pants and underwear. She's almost fully potty trained. You know, she's not limiting herself. She's actually like determined to do things, which is amazing. And I just stare at her and I'm like, how are you doing this? Like you're absolutely incredible. But she is now able to bend her right elbow, which is fantastic. And that's because of her, but then also because of some in-home physical therapy that I've been doing with her, her serial splinting that she's been having with her physicians. And she's also going to be getting surgery in March to fix her left side. So now her left side will have more flexibility. So she'll actually be able to use both arms, which is fantastic.
That's so amazing. And I'm so excited for her to have that. And at such a young age too. I could just see her one day, you know, being like valedictorian or maybe even president, and just, you know, you're like really speaking to how her life is just so much better because of the opportunities that you two have given her. So I'm just so grateful to follow your journey, and I'm so proud of you guys for really being incredible parents to her. What is your outlook for the future? You said that you are thinking about writing a memoir.
I am. You know, a lot of people are very just like, they're curious. We're human. We're naturally curious. They're like, but why did you adopt? But why did you adopt a kid with special needs? Why did you adopt internationally? And I just think my story of, you know, kind of like your podcast here, like turning pain into like something that's powerful, you know, why not share that stories? And it might help someone else, which is why I'm so outspoken on social media about issues like adoption and orphans and infertility and miscarriage. Because a lot of these things, like, people don't want to talk about, or people don't know our options. And I just want people to feel like, okay, someone else has lived this, they get it. Because when I had my miscarriage, I was the only person in my social circle who I knew had one. And it was very isolating. And I depended on my mom a lot because she had her own challenges. And it was a very lonely experience. And I just want to be able to empower someone else to be like, yes, I'm validated. I'm not alone. You know, someone else went through this. I can do it too.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a great kind of last thought to end on. If there is somebody who is listening to this episode and feels alone or is considering adoption, but just, you know, is very overwhelmed by what they could potentially go through, do you have any advice for them?
This is the same advice I give to anyone who's considering adoption. Do not let fear dictate your choices. Because here's the thing, if I would have let fear take over, I would have never have adopted. I would never be a mom to this amazing child. I would have never brought her home. Because being told your child might never walk, that's really scary. But here's the thing, if she was biologically mine, would I give up? Would I say no to her? Would I not give her all of the chances and all of the opportunities that she deserves? So at the end of the day, adoption is hard, but it's also so incredibly beautiful. And it's so incredibly just eye-opening, and it makes you see the world differently. And it makes you reconsider, you know, how you live your life and what choices you make as a parent. And I wouldn't trade that in for anything. So just always trust your gut. Don't let fear take over, and just know that yes, it's hard, but the end result is absolutely incredible.
I love that. So if someone is listening to this and they would like to either reach out to you directly, or if they'd like to just keep up with Adelaide's story, is there anywhere on social media that they can do that?
Yeah, so you can always find me on Facebook. My Facebook username is Amanda Julia Frangoulis, and I'll spell that for you all, Frangoulis. Or you can follow me on Instagram, and my handle is Irish Lass, Lass, 14-1988.
Love it. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. I almost burst into tears like 15 times. So I just hope everyone loves this as much as I did. And I so appreciate you coming on to speak about this today.
Thank you so much, Davina. I really appreciate your time today.
My goal for this podcast is to always spread some positive vibes. And to keep that good energy flowing, it would mean a lot to me if you could share this episode with your friends or leave a nice review on iTunes. Or you could always find me on Instagram at Davina Faust and take a screenshot of the episode. But remember, no matter what it looks like for you, your happiness is worth fighting for.